Hello, Henry.
Hello, Mum.
All right, going to get the giggling out of the way.
Yeah.
I really am so happy that you're doing this show because you know how I've said in wanting to do this podcast, it's about collecting all these different ideas and perspectives from all these different people. And to have a 12-year-old view of all these questions, but also of the world, is incredibly important and interesting.
Yeah, we haven't discovered as much as some of you older folk, so I think it's just an interesting point of view.
But I don't think you think less deeply, though. I mean, I feel like you are a pretty considered person.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I taught you well.
Why, you did, yes.
Hello, I'm Minnie Driver. And welcome to Mini Questions. I've always loved Proust's questionnaire. It was originally an 18th century parlor game meant to reveal an individual's true nature. But with so many questions, there wasn't really an opportunity to expand on anything. So I took the format of Proust's questionnaire and adapted what I think are seven of the most important questions you could ever ask someone. They are, when and where were you happiest? What is the quality you like least about yourself? What relationship, real or fictionalized, defines love for you? What question would you most like answered? What person, place, or experience has shaped you the most? What would be your last meal? And can you tell me something in your life that has grown out of a personal disaster? The more people we ask, the more we begin to see what makes us similar and what makes us individual. I've gathered a group of really remarkable people who I'm honoured and humbled to have had a chance to engage with. My guest today is Henry Driver. Henry is a thoughtful, curious, quick-witted lover of video games, music, and Dungeons & Dragons. Henry is also my son. He's been part of the creation of this podcast from the beginning, both as intellectual and technical support. I mean, on numerous occasions, he's fixed my computer. I mean, mostly, you know, it just wasn't turned on. But he also helped me formulate the questions themselves. I wanted to include the voice and thoughts of a 12-year-old boy living in this time of social dislocation and remote everything. I always learn a lot from talking to him, and interviewing him today was no different at all. I'm going to ask you the first question. When and where were you happiest?
Wow, that's already deep. I think I'd have to say on my dad's hammock out on his porch. It was not that long ago. I think it was like a week ago or something. I've never really felt so peaceful at any point in my life of just laying down and kind of just being in nature. And no, like, offense to you, Mum.
None taken, my darling. Oh, do you equate happiness with peace? So is that your idea of what real of happiness is feeling peaceful?
I think that's one of the things that go into happiness. I think happiness is definitely, it varies from person to person. Like, one person will think this is happiness, that some other person will think this is happiness. And I think it's just where you feel like yourself the most is where you are happiest.
Where you feel like yourself the most. Oh.
Mm.
I like that, darling. I've got to stop calling you darling because you're a guest on the show. Sorry, Henry.
Yes.
I think that is actually incredibly good advice to give yourself in your life, which is where you feel yourself the most is where you will be the happiest. We've talked about this quite a lot, but looking for 100% of anything all the time is probably folly. So like thinking that you're going to be 100% happy all the time is probably not going to work out.
Yeah, it's not possible. I mean, there's always going to be those moments when you drop and you're going to be sad, but sadness has to balance out the happiness. So I think it all kind of just comes into a giant circle.
Oh, darling, I love you so much.
Love you too.
What question would you most like answered?
Okay. So, I mean, where does everything go? What's the point of it all? Like, well, what happens? We're all just sort of living, right? we're all just sort of living on this earth. We're doing what we do, but why? And I want to know why. Because it doesn't really, in the whole scheme of everything, what does us doing anything matter? That's my question.
I know, it's weird. It's like, believe me, philosophers have been pontificating about this for time immemorial. What does it mean? And does there have to be meaning? I think we search for meaning. We want to attach meaning to it. But I think that's a very human trait.
Yeah, I definitely think that as well, because you wouldn't find a pig questioning its own mortality. I mean,
no, a pig is just a pig. In fact, Stephen Fry talked about tree frogs. Tree frogs don't question how they tree frog. They just do it.
They do it because it's instinct. But when you're able to like conceptualize it, it kind of gets messed up in your own head.
Do you think it's because we think we're so much better than everything else, human beings, that we think there should be a meaning? Like, our lives are so important, there must be a meaning to it.
Yeah, like over the thousands of years, humans have been sort of thinking they're always superior. And I think that definitely puts on a mindset of, we're more important, we're the ones that should live forever, and we can do everything. But in actual fact, what are you doing? I mean,
well, how can those two things be true? How can we think that we're so important and yet be destroying the planet in such a now conscious way? Like, we know what's happening and we're not changing at a fast enough rate. So why?
There's still people that don't believe it's true. Like, how? It's so obvious that we are messing the planet up, but in our heads, we think it's going to be fine. Everything's going to work out. We're human. We know what to do. But in actual fact, we don't.
So do you think there's just a fundamental arrogance in us having been sort of at the top of the food chain for so long, and we've become complacent and just think we're owed answers and we can do whatever we want with this planet? Like, do you think that's kind of what's happening?
Yeah, I think if you get used to something for so long, you just put it at the back of your head. You don't really care about what's happening to it, right? But then as it gets worse and worse, you have to kind of realize something, that it's just all kind of going wrong.
What do you think it is all for? The messy business of living, us being terrible custodians of a planet. Like, what do you think? Do you think there is a meaning, or do you think that there actually isn't?
I don't think there's a meaning to what we do. I think we live our lives, and the people that do what they want are the people that live. And I think that's the meaning of why we live. It's to do what we want.
But what about society, darling, and mortgages and constructs and all the stuff that people
have to get? That's what people have created to make it so that you can live how you want in the confines of being like an okay and moral person, right? Yeah, air quotes. And I mean, you have to live your life how you want it. Otherwise, how are you going to be happy ever?
So do you think what Grandpa said to me when I was a kid, which was, find what you love to do and get someone to pay you to do it?
I think that is a huge part of it. I want to be out in the world, right? That's me. Other people can do them.
So would you rather not have very much money and sort of live out of a van and be doing what you want, whatever that is?
If that's how it goes, then yes. Yeah, I would rather live out of a van.
Wait, if what goes how?
If that's how I want to live, then yeah, that's how it goes.
So you really are a libertarian. You just want to do what you want.
I have no idea what that means.
Well, there's two meanings to it. There's a political meaning to it, which is a particular way of thinking, which is literally sort of, you get to do what you want. No government, no nothing. Nobody tells you what to do. It's sort of like First Amendment on steroids. But a libertarian also, I mean, it means, you know, liberty. It's freedom. So the freedom to do what you want.
Yeah, be who you want.
I'm interested to see what you want when you grow up, Hen. Like, what kinds of things do you think you're going to want?
I honestly don't know.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of want to have the space to be able to figure that out.
Yeah, I think that's how we live.
Right. Question three. What relationship, real or fictionalized, defines love for you?
Now, this is the one that I thought about the most.
Is it?
Well, I'm a TV connoisseur, as some would say. So I do like to watch TV. I'm an enthusiast, some may say. So I have had my fair share of TV, and I'd like to take mine from a certain television show called Adventure Time. And it's between two people called Simon Petrikov and Betty. And I find that their relationship is... It goes through thousands of years, right? And in the shortest explanation that I can make is one of them, Simon Petrikov, he can basically live forever. And his wife, who he wants to be his wife, Betty, cannot live forever. And her seeing that he can live forever, she runs away. She does not want to be with him anymore. But thousands and thousands of years into the future, he finds a way to get her to love him again and goes back, and she takes him back. And I find that love is just a place where you care about somebody so much that you would go through change, you'd go through everything just to find them again, even if you lost them. So I feel like it's just a connection that you cannot be broken if you actually truly love someone.
I think that's very true, Han. I think that idea of forbearance, which is a really great word. I don't know. Do you know what forbearance means?
I mean, I can kind of guess, but not not exactly.
It's like waiting something out, being strong through time, having the temerity to bear something and being strong. And I think that is a cornerstone of loving for sure. Well, I know how much you love Adventure Time. I love Adventure Time as well. You taught me everything I know about Adventure Time, and we both love it. I like that it taught you about love.
Just because I'm 12 and I literally have no idea about relationships.
You know what, babe? You've got to start somewhere. Your first relationship in love is actually with yourself, which nobody really tells you. And the way that you treat yourself and the way that you sort of belly up to your own life, you're in the right place. I think you're doing all the right stuff. And, you know, one day you'll have a relationship with a person and you'll listen to this conversation and wonder why I didn't give you better advice.
I think your advice is pretty great, Mom.
Thanks, darling. Henry. Henry, Mr. Driver.
Mr. Driver.
Mr. Driver. So, what quality do you like least about yourself?
Wow. I think a quality that I'd like least about myself, it would have to be that I'm not like a perfectionist or anything, just to sort of back up this question. I just never think I get things perfectly correct. So I'll make something that I'll be like, oh, this is cool. And I'll be like, wait a second, that's not right. Let me redo that. And I'll just keep on doing it until I just never finish it. So I feel like that's, in no way, I'm trying not to make it perfect, just acceptable. And I just can never reach that.
Well, you don't feel like you can reach acceptability. So it's not perfectionism, it's acceptabilism.
Yeah, I guess that is the correct term for what I always think there's a detail that's incorrect.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if you get that from me. You're very hard on yourself. And
yeah, you are as well.
I know. And I feel like actually, it's funny hearing you say that, I kind of get a bit of a drop in my stomach because I recognize that of being really tough on yourself. Like I see you give 100% to really most of what you do and working very hard. And I also know I do that. But I don't think either of us give ourselves quite enough credit.
Yeah, I definitely think that's true.
Well, that's just taught me. Hearing you say that is like, oh, great. I passed on the quality I like least about myself to my child. Good work.
But I mean, it's not the worst thing that could have come out of anybody. I mean, there's always like different things that could be so much worse. But I think that is just what I find to be the most disliked by me.
Hmm. It's also like having an awareness of it means you're infinitely more likely to change it, right? If you wanted to.
I'd say so.
Yeah.
It's easier to, like, it's easier to get rid of something if you can recognize it first.
I think you have to recognize it first, don't you? Otherwise, you might just be getting rid of bits of yourself that are actually quite good.
Yeah. I mean, it's a metaphor for life.
What in your life has grown out of a personal disaster? And you know, by a personal disaster, I mean something that at the time seemed very hard or like it was something not working out.
So I'm 12, so I haven't had many personal disasters in my time. I think, I don't want to go sad.
Don't censor yourself, love. Say whatever you feel.
I think when Granny passed, I realized that nothing is really permanent in a way. Like, death will come, but just like you have to make the most of the time you have until the end point comes. I think that's just a thing that will happen at some point, but you always have to think, but what can we do now instead of when that does happen? And I think that's what definitely came out from Granny's passing.
Did you really think that after she died, it was like, wow, we better live every moment because it really is, it's gone in an instant.
It's temporary. Yeah, I think that was this big thing that came out of Granny's passing, definitely.
Do you think that's also why you really want to do what you want and not follow any kind of mainstream idea in your life? It's just like, go live.
Yeah, live. It's your life.
Yeah, babe. I want you to do that too.
Libertarian. Same thing.
A libertarian. I wouldn't mind if you were a libertarian, because that means that it would probably be about free libraries.
I mean, that I would run for that if I was a president.
You'd run on a platform of free libraries.
Yes. I'm a libertarian.
Libraries are free. I mean, I guess you have to get a card. Maybe it would be on a platform of like, it was against the law to close libraries.
No, definitely free libraries.
That's quite a sort of Homer Simpson platform. Free libraries. They're already free. I don't care.
I mean, yeah, everyone gets a library. No matter who you are, you get a library.
All right, my little libertarian. What person, place, or experience has most altered your life?
I think it was definitely moving to England, because that changed everything. And it kind of opened up my perspective to the world. My view completely widened. Everything just kind of, it was just different. And I liked it, being in a different place. I thought it changed how I looked at the world a lot.
Can you say some of the things that, like, either you suddenly saw how you'd thought about them before, and then how you thought about them differently once you were going to school in a different country?
Yeah, I thought in LA, that's how I thought you're supposed to live, by a certain routine, and you're supposed to have this blank, blank, blank set out for you, right? But then when I moved to England, it all changed. There wasn't a routine. I would go to school, and then I'd walk over to my cousin's house. Maybe I'd go to the park. Maybe I'd walk somewhere, just anywhere.
You take the train as well by yourself with your cousin.
Yeah, it would be completely different to just the go to school, come back home, do homework, watch TV, eat dinner, go to sleep, right? It just changed, which I just thought it was amazing, living completely differently.
Do you think that you know, the other thing about me, your mother, is that I have such a difficult time with change, and I love things to stay the same and for routine, yeah. And which is probably why I forced that on you. Yeah. Did you always know that you liked change before, or did going to England really show you that this was something that you could embrace and take on into the rest of your life?
I definitely think it was going to England, because before I just thought routine was how it kind of went.
I think that was my plan.
But it changed, definitely. As I went to England, it sort of my perspective expanded, as I say.
You left behind an enormous
amount.
Like, you left behind your whole life, your friendships, your everything.
I mean, I didn't leave them behind. I still have them as friends.
You're completely correct. But you stepped out of that. Did that feel exciting or scary to you?
Both, honestly. I mean, there was certain aspects, like I was horrified that I was going to lose my friends. But at the same time, I was excited that I was going to make new friends. And just everything was kind of different now and it was going to be cool. At least I hoped it was cool, and it was. So,
do you appreciate that about yourself? Like, can you sometimes get the perspective and go, wow, you know, I did that. I actually did something that was really hard and
overcame it.
Yeah, and moved, you know, opened up the aperture to experience something that was very different.
I definitely think that. I think opening up to new experiences is just, it's how it goes. It's how you...
But do you process that yourself? So in terms of going, I'm a person who can accommodate change and flexibility, and like, I just want to make sure this is going into the basic architecture of who you are, because it's having watched you navigate all of this, it was pretty mind-blowing for me to kind of watch you, because you asked if we could go. This wasn't driven by me or my boyfriend Addison. This was you saying, can we do this as a family?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think I sort of, it was an independent-ish decision, because there were still some things that I had to consult with you guys, but it was still relatively independent. And that felt good. I liked it.
Good. Remember that, darling one. Very important. Life lessons. Now, last question.
Yes.
Okay. So, what would be your last meal?
So, like, within the government confines of, like, $20 or what?
So you're immediately putting yourself on death row.
Oh, is that not what's happening? Oh.
Oh, my God. Darling, what did you do to get onto death row?
I don't know. You're the one that asked the question.
It doesn't. Oh, my God. That's so awful that's where you think that's where it would be. I mean, I suppose last meal.
Yeah, that's what the last meal means.
Is there really only a certain amount of money apportioned for prisoners on death row?
Yeah, you can only get certain things, and it has to be within a certain amount of money. And it can't be like, it's like, you can't get more than a certain amount of items, I think. It's a whole thing.
Good gracious. All right, well, you know, you can frame this within a prison because it's your choice, but it really could be your last meal.
Like a hospital, I guess?
I actually think it's very interesting that you're making this location specific. Let's say it was like you knew you were going to die.
Yeah.
But you had enough time that you could have whatever you wanted to eat cooked by whomever from wherever before you went.
Mm.
But I sort of want to hear the penitentiary version as well. But like, tell me the dream version first.
Okay, dream version is I would have a Thanksgiving feast like we do on Sundays in England with the whole family, and then have the whole family there, because I think that's like the best. Sometimes the turkey's dry, but I don't care. It still tastes amazing.
Hey, what?
baste the turkey a tiny bit more next time.
Turkey's notoriously dry. It's a notoriously difficult meat. We try to inject it with the juices. You've seen me with the syringe. It's a nightmare. I wouldn't cook it if it wasn't Thanksgiving.
Pointers, Mom. You should be writing this down.
I love it. Okay, so Thanksgiving feast, or like what we have on a Sunday, which is usually roast chicken.
Yeah, so like turkey, roast potatoes, Auntie Kate's ones, they're amazing. I know yours aren't bad.
Thanks, babe.
But Auntie Kate's are the best.
Yeah, she does make the best ones.
Green beans, sweet potato, marshmallow mash pie. It's all delicious. That would be my last meal, 100%.
But what about pudding?
Granny's apple crumble.
Oh, God, she did make the best apple crumble.
That is chef's kiss.
Do you know, she used to, when we were kids, Henry, we'd be driving along and she'd suddenly like screech the car over to the side of the road. And she'd be like, those apples are just going to fall on the ground unless somebody eats them. And we'd be like, but aren't they in somebody else's garden? Yes, yes, but they're going to waste, and waste not, want not. And so the next thing we knew, we'd literally, she'd be hiking me and Kate over somebody's fence into their garden where surely they did have thousands of apples that were, you know, but nonetheless, we were scrumpying, which is also a polite way of saying stealing. And so she'd get us to stuff these apples up our jumpers. So in case anybody came, and I always used to go, if somebody comes, they'll know we've got apples stuffed up our jumper.
Well, I have done that as well. Just to say, I've taken apples from somebody's tree and they tasted amazing.
I know. I think we've all done that. I'm not, I know that it is stealing. However, the stolen apples that Mum would make apple crumble with always tasted the best.
I wish I could have tried them.
I know, darling. Well, I know. I do know how to make that apple crumble, and I shall teach you.
Yes, you will.
Yes, I will. I just want to circle back, because I did say dream version of your last meal, but what would be your penitentiary meal? So
penitentiary being like actually sticking to what would really be able to happen.
Yeah, if it was your last meal and you were in prison.
Well, I've heard of a few people that had some weird last meals, like a grain of rice and a birthday cake. But I'd go more subtle. I'd go more rustic with a platter of rice and beans and a San Pellegrino. It's not expensive and it's delicious. And maybe some hot sauce, because hot sauce makes everything taste better.
Some rice and beans. And some hot sauce and a San Pellegrino.
But they're like the spiciest hot sauce they have. Because I'm going out with a burning mouth. And that's probably within $20.
Yeah, definitely.
As long as you don't buy one of like the bigger packs of San Pellegrinos, just like one can on like the shelf, you know.
You're not buying a case of San Pellegrino, you're just buying a can.
Yeah, because that's like $10. I'm not spending $10 on a single Pellegrino, no.
Why not? It's your last meal.
Because that's $10 wasted when I only can spend like 20 to 50. I forgot the exact amount. I am not wasting my last meal on a flavored sparkling water.
And on that bombshell, that insight into what it is to teen America, I'm glad you're thrifty, darling. Save your pennies for that camper van that you're going to travel around the world in.
Yes, it'll be a Volkswagen. One of the Barbie ones.
Thank you, Henry.
Don't even worry about it.
Henry is charting his own path in his life, and as such has decided that he wants to go to boarding school in the fall. I am having to love him with extremely loose hands and let him go and figure out this next adventure. I cannot wait to see what he does next.
Mini Questions is hosted and written by me, Minnie Driver. Supervising producer, Aaron Kaufman. Producer, Morgan Lavoie. Research assistant, Marissa Brown. Original music, Sorry Baby, by Minnie Driver. Additional music by Aaron Kaufman. Executive produced by me, Minnie Driver. Special thanks to Jim Nicolay, Will Pearson, Addison O'Day, Lisa Castella and Anique Oppenheim at WKPR, Dela Pescador, Kate Driver and Jason Weinberg, and for constantly solicited tech support, Henry Driver.